Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent returnee from rock bottom and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame. The highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn, but are so grateful that we did. So we talk a lot about our mental health as adults, or at least we should, and are trying to, and we are better able to understand what is going on with us. Doesn't tend to make it any less scary, but at least we can articulate it and digest it. But when we're kids and this stuff is happening, it's even more confusing and frightening, and not just for us, but everyone around us. Kids can be scared by difference, and that can lead to a ton of isolation. Vittorio Angelone and I are discussing all of this and more today. Okay, so it is around 2005, 2006, the great, great years of the mid-noughties, where everything was just kicking off. We are in Belfast at school, and in this moment, Vittorio, why do you think you've got no friends?
Because I can't quite make it into school a lot of the time. So I had, it's an interesting thing to have had like a, I don't know if you would call it a mental health crisis, but it's a weird to have like that kind of stuff going on when you're like nine, because a lot of the conversations that would probably be a bit more candid or frank about it were probably being had with my parents rather than with me. So I didn't know that it was like, looking back, panic attacks, anxiety attacks, probably agoraphobia, all these different things. But like, because then it was just like, it was like in like codified words for kids. So the therapist at the hospital was like, and when you have a wobble,
right, yeah.
What does it feel like? Where do you feel it? And I had to like draw a little thing to represent what. Now I'm like, oh, that was clearly a panic attack or an anxiety attack. But at the time, I didn't really know what it was. And I still don't. And I had a notion a while ago, but it's quite a scary thing to access the, or try and access like the hospital records. To be like, because you have like some like legal right to like the notes that were made about you or something. That's like a freedom of information thing. So I have a notion to be like, I would be really interested to see what, because I only have like little clues. Like I found a book beside my mum's bed when I was like nine that was like, is your child an indigo child?
Oh, fucking hell. Jesus Christ.
And I was like, that sounds like it's about me.
Is your child an indigo child? Sounds like you're under some kind of curse.
That's, felt like I was.
That's fucking mental. Is your child one of the Anul cult?
Yeah, it was like, yeah, very strange. And then I Googled it recently. It basically means like autism.
Oh, shit. Okay.
What it means.
Right.
And that's a whole different thing that I'm kind of going through now of like potentially seeking autism diagnosis, which is fun.
I bet
it's
it is.
It's a fun process that takes fucking ages. But I get loads of jokes out of it, which is all I care about, really.
Yeah.
But basically, yeah, so I was petrified of going into school, petrified of leaving the house. When I made it into school, I would maybe make it through like a couple lessons and then like just get really, really scared and like run out of the room.
Wow.
And stuff like that. It was bad. It was really horrible. I don't know. Like, it's such a hard thing for me to grab a hold of now. But in hindsight, I'm like, yeah, I couldn't. Massive separation anxiety. Very scared of being away from the house. And which is a strange thing and obviously very frustrating for my parents because I would, like, freak out, be in tears in school. And then my mum or dad, like, they both have full-time jobs, would have to, like, pick me up, take me home. And then when I was home, I was fine. Because of course I was fine, because that's where I'm fine. So it's such a brutal thing to pick up your screaming child from school, take him home, and then he just sits and watches TV, like, happy. It's like, well, obviously you're happy because you're just in your house. But it's hard to, like, rationalize that to be like, well, he's obviously, something's going on with the whole thing.
Yeah.
But there's good sides. You get away with stuff when you've got severe mental health problems. I punched my primary school principal.
Fuck off. Fuck you. Oh, fucking heaven.
Because I just needed to, I would like freak out and like run away from school. And the principal tried to like grab me.
Oh.
And I was just like, wow. Just, yeah. Punched the principal. Take that, Mrs. McCacken.
Mrs. Take that, Mr. McGoundry. Mrs. McCacken, who has made, if she's made it to be headmistress, she's probably not in the prime of her youth.
At least in her 60s.
She's
like a small lady.
Oh, fucking up. I mean, she shouldn't have tried to grab you.
Well, yeah, you can't grab kids, but it was 2005.
Yeah, no one gave a fuck.
We were all grabbing kids in 2005.
yeah. Oh,
so that kind of sent this like little spiral of me just being very like othered from my class because I wasn't there a lot of the time and some people were absolutely lovely. I remember a girl, Bria, just being super supportive. Like anytime I could make it into the lessons, there was ages where I would go into school from like the staff entrance and just sit in the principal's office and do worksheets because I was like academic, like I could do all the stuff, but I just couldn't be in the room with everybody else. So I would just do the worksheets that everybody else was doing, but just by myself without like the taught bit of a lesson, but it was fine. I just cracked on with my own stuff. And so I was very like separate. But then when I was in, like some people were very like cool about it, but then some people were some of the other students were like, obviously, because that's what kids do. If you had a student in your class that like would freak out, start crying and run out of the room every so often. As a 9-year-old, you're like, he's fucking weird.
I'm a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know. Like, of course they were a bit like weird with me. So that's fine. There was one really tricky thing where I went to secondary school and there was a guy who moved to my primary school when in like, I'm trying to think English school years, year five, which is what, because we don't have reception with primary six. So the second last year of primary school. And he obviously like moving to a new school at that point is like tricky. And he came from a private school and then came to our school. So he was kind of getting a bit of like stick for being like posh or whatever. And it was like a whole thing.
Oh my God, it's really, really hard when people do that.
Yeah, but if you don't want your kid to...
If you don't know what it's like to be and have it taken the piss out of you, really.
But it was the day we went and played that school at football, we realised that they wore like like proper prep school uniforms, like shorts, blazers. They had like little caps and all. Jesus. Like the, if you drew a picture of like a dorky prep school kid, like that's what they wore. And when we came back, we were like, yo, you used to have to dress like that. That's fucking crazy. So that was the whole thing. And he was like trying to slot himself in or whatever. But then when we went to secondary school, I'd kind of gotten over a lot of this kind of real panic attacks and all that stuff. So I was kind of okay going into school. Much more so. It would still flare up every so often, but it wasn't evident to everybody else in the same way that it was in primary school. And anytime me and this guy got in an argument, he would be like, do you want me to tell everybody what you were like in primary school?
Holy shit.
And kind of like held it over me.
That's so fucking manipulative.
Yeah, what a little shit. Yeah.
Do you know, just having gone to an all-girls boarding school and it being like 95% of the reason why I'm so fucked up.
Yeah,
it is that psychological torture. It's fucking mental. I also love...
You'd rather be punched.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rather, like, just punch me in the face.
Just get it over and done with.
Yeah, it's fine.
Rather than this, like, torment that makes you question if you're actually existing or not. But I just love that you preface that whole story with every time we got in a fight. Like,
it was, but even just anything, it would just be like any kind of disagreement.
Don't mean to just tell them what you were like.
And I was like, fuck.
What a nasty little fuckwit.
Yeah.
Go back to your fucking blazer and cap, you twat. That's mental.
Yeah, so that was tricky. And I don't like begrudge him that. Obviously, everybody copes in different ways, but...
Yeah,
that's my...
It's just self-preservation.
So I was... had this... I was quite strange. I never really fitted into any of the cliques, which is so common in comedians. They're like, oh, I kind of drifted between friendship groups. But there were some points... I'm quite bad socially. And my girlfriend thinks it's because I was out of school a lot when I was 9, 10 and 11.
Right.
Because apparently that's when you learn how to, like, talk to people.
So when this is forming and you
have... So I was... I just didn't really have that.
Yeah.
I was in, like, a separate room doing worksheets and stuff. I remember even when I was in the classroom, and this is where the kids, like, there was just like any weakness for kids is just like open season.
Yeah.
We watched Roald Dahl's The Witches, the film, on like Thursday afternoons. We could like watch a movie that was like
the OG one.
Yeah.
I mean, the other one came out in like 2020. So
yeah, yeah, it wasn't the very that would be strange. Yeah, we time traveled every Thursday.
It's crazy how they got films early in Belfast.
Yeah. It got early because it's closer to America. It was like golden hour every Thursday where you would like watch a movie. And they had just like had a stack of like VHSs.
Yeah.
And basically the class would like vote on what they wanted to watch.
Sick.
And we watched The Witches and I got freaked out by it. I think partly because it like is a separation. It's like a kid being removed from his family and this whole thing. And I like had a panic attack and like freaked out and left the room. And every Thursday from that point onwards, the whole class would vote for The Witches every week.
Oh my God, kids are fucking... kids?
Witches?
Kids
are sick. Like, it's such good...
Fascist.
It's so good by them. Like, it's so sick to be like, let's fuck it, Mom.
That.
So I had to leave the room every golden hour on Thursdays.
I love that opportunity of a Thursday at school to be able to watch a movie... And they forfeited that hour and a half of joy for 5 minutes of pure fucking ecstasy.
I mean, surely if you're the teacher, you take it out of the running.
Just imagine the teacher in the front being like, no, you kids.
Off you go, Vittorio. And I would just leave. Like, we wouldn't even... I would leave before they started the... Which is crazy as a teacher to be like, you...
That's mental.
Go do worksheets and everybody else will watch this film
that
they've chosen so that you have to leave.
That we've watched for the last 6 weeks, like prisoners watching Shawshank or fucking something. That's insanity.
Yeah, very wild.
That teacher had checked out.
Yeah, they're just like, yeah, fuck him. He punched the principal.
Fuck him.
So I was quite awkward socially and quite difficult socially. And I always found this when I was like early teenager. I was like, people aren't liking me. And I don't know how to fix it. And I got the worst idea in my head. But I think we've all had this idea where I just said to a guy once, I was like, why don't you like me? And he was like, it's so weird that you would ask me that. And I was like, well, obviously there's a reason you don't like me, and I'd like to know why you don't like me. And he was like, I don't know, I just don't like you. And I was like, right, well, that's no help.
Give me something I can work with.
But it's just such an insane thing to think someone's going to give you an answer to that you can fix.
Sorry, I keep on referring Friends in this podcast. It's an episode of Friends when Chandler goes to the theatre and the woman stands at the front and goes, why don't you like me?
Oh, yeah. Chapter one.
My first spirit. Divorce is a four-letter word. That images of you in the playground going, why don't you like me?
Ridiculous. And it's just like...
But that response is so much worse than like a polarized one, like a superlative thing of going like, it's this reason or this reason.
And in hindsight, like now that I'm like potentially seeking diagnosis with autism, like how autistic is that? To be like,
why don't you like me dead in
the eye? Why don't you like me and how do I fix it to the person's face? Mate, that's not, you can't do that.
Kid looking around like,
what the fuck am I supposed to
Mrs. McAllister.
But just being like, well, you have to tell me.
Yeah.
Because I need to know how.
Yeah.
To fix this, but like nobody's going to coach you on how to be their friend.
Jesus. Fucking hell. That's like, I don't know, just what a tough existence. And as well if this was in secondary school when that happened, so it's like,
yeah,
like sort of getting towards early adolescence or you know, puberty and all that shit, where you're desperately like seeking an identity of any kind. And when I went to boarding school, oh, that poor little girl. When I went to boarding school, I like loved horses.
Nice. You were a horse girl?
I was a real horse girl.
Sick.
Fucking loved a horse, did I? Fucking loved a horse. And realised like super quick, because my identity at primary school had been the girl who really liked horses, and for some reason that was fucking cool. I don't know why.
You were cool because you liked horses?
I liked horses. That says so much about how posh I am.
If there was a girl in my primary school whose whole thing was she loved horses, I would have bullied her.
She'd be fucking crucified.
I would have stopped having a panic attack and be like, that's fucking weird.
Oh my God, thank fuck you with. Let's take the heat off me for a second. That's someone weirder than I am.
Let's watch Black Beauty again.
I was just going to say that. No, I was cool. That was a cool thing.
You were crushing it as a horse girl.
I was crushing it. Nice. And because I crushed it like so hard.
Before, you went into secondary school with like I've got horses. It, guys. I've got it unlocked. I'm the horse girl.
Yeah, I'm the horse girl. This is my identity. And then realized, and it wasn't even that it like wasn't cool. It's just that no one acknowledged it.
No one cared.
No one cared. And so I was like, oh, like I need to look for something else here that, you know, stakes out my identity in this year group. But it wasn't horses. And I tried for a bit, just like no one caught on. And then like, but it's this thing sort of early adolescence when you're going like, because school is a fucking minefield. And when you're in there and it's not fun, you're going, okay, you know, you don't have the wherewithal to understand the future and like project yourself on going, you know, it's going to be fine one day. You're going, this is where I am now. This is where I exist. I need to mold myself and make this place as safe as possible. And if no one is giving you any tools to do that facing up to this kid going, just tell me what I have to do. And then being like, I don't know.
Well, that's the straightaway, like the worst way to get someone to like you.
That's advice to everybody.
But it's like, just to like, even if you're trying to like flirt with someone or do anything, like trying to become they want you to be.
Oh, it's the worst.
Is like the worst tactic ever. But I think so many people do that.
Oh God, I did it for years. Like years.
But in relationships as well, basically like you're projecting an imagined version of yourself that you think they'll like, but you've imagined a version of them because you don't know what they like. Yeah. So there's just two fake people interacting in between the two people that are actually there.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, of course, that's why they don't get on with you. Because there's so much need. The worst thing to feel is like someone needs you to like them. It's just like,
oh, yeah. God. It's like cloying. But this, like, I think it's really great that you bring up that, like, to do with relationships, because it's something I talk about quite a lot. This, like, the scanning someone and looking for your perceived holes in them and then trying to fill them in the least, like, graphic way possible. But, like, going, okay, what do they need? How can I be that person for them? And completely altering yourself and molding yourself into that thing is destructive, not only for you, but also for them, because you are not being authentic to your, to yourself. You're creating an entirely different thing. And you're right about the projecting thing as well. To go, I imagine this is what you want. I imagine this is who you are. And then when they don't live, when they don't do that, you're like, well, fuck you. Like, and it's really, and it's really distressing.
But it happens with everything. You see comedians do it, who do a show that they think the audience will like. And it's like, well, and then if that goes badly, or like making anything, like, you gotta just make the stuff that you like, because if you try and make what you think they want and then it doesn't go well, you don't like it, and they don't, like, nobody likes what you did. Whereas if you just do the stuff that you like, at least you fucking like it. If your aim is to be as yourself as possible, if someone doesn't like that, you go, well, I wasn't aiming to please you.
Yeah.
I was aiming to be myself.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a shame that you didn't like it, but it's not the fucking end of my identity.
What point, I say at what point, because it might not have happened, but I'm just assuming it happened. Did you become cool at any point?
No, I don't think I've ever been cool. It's very, although it's very easy to be cool when you study classical music at a music college.
Just
an absolute everybody. All the dorks from every school around the country end up in one institution.
Fancy the
so if you've ever played sports, you're just like the alpha of But it's mad how people still sort themselves into like hierarchies that have always been there. So like even at a music college in the classical music department, like, where everybody is a fucking dork.
Oh yeah, let's just segue here, guys. I got very close to the mic for that. Victoria and I went to the same arts.
Conservatoire.
Oh my god, what a fancy fucking word.
Yeah, yeah.
We went to the same conservatoire. I studied acting and Victoria studied music. Oh god, I'm so glad I've got a BA.
I've got a B minus.
Do you know what? I got a 2-1.
I got a 2-1 too.
It's not bad.
I nearly got a first. I was really.
I fucking didn't.
I was really close to first. Yeah, but yours is a spoof. They assess the act. You don't have to do any exams.
How the hell do they give you a degree? I spent, my eldest brother, who went to Oxford, and his wife went to Oxford as well, he studied classics and she studied history of art. And he was like, oh God, Sophie, like, he was joking, but he was like, Sophie pretends she did a degree, but actually she did like 2 essays a term. I was like, I got a fucking degree. I was a gorilla for a month.
Oh,
like,
animals.
That's.
I had a mate called Martin, who's from Paisley, which is just outside Glasgow.
Oh, I know him.
Martin Quinn.
Yeah, really.
He's brilliant. Really, really funny.
He was in Let the Right One In.
He's brilliant. I love him so much. He was one of my best friends at Guildhall.
Where we went.
And he had this really funny thing where I became friends with like quite a lot of Scottish people when I arrived, because they don't make fun of your accent quite as much as English people do.
Sure.
And me and a couple of them were going to go watch the Celtic match at the pub. It's a really nice pub in Camden where they show Celtic matches, the Sheephaven Bay. I would recommend.
Catch Victoria there every Saturday.
I mean, I'm there a lot. But we were like, oh, do you want to come watch the match? And Martin was in the middle of his animals project.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And he went, no, man.
I've got to go to the zoo.
I have to go practice my tiger. I fucking hate this course.
Oh my God.
I have to practice my tiger.
I fucking hate this course. Like, I know that we are segueing out of what we're discussing, but I just want to take a little moment to talk about what it's like doing an acting degree, because it is fucking mental.
I tried. I auditioned for drama school after I did music college.
Did you audition for Guildhall?
I got into the final round at Guildhall.
Yeah, you fucking did. That's 2 days long. It's mental.
Yeah, it was mad. I had a really good time, but I'm so glad I didn't get in, because I would have got in 2020.
Oh, shit, boy.
Which would have been the worst.
Yeah.
Drama school. I feel so bad for those people who were doing like movement classes on Zoom.
No, I can't. It's like so much of the magic that I don't want to say magic, I sound like a dick, but there are parts of it that are really fucking magic. And so much of that exists in this kind of community that you have being all together. So I remember when that was going on, I was like, Jesus, I feel for the people.
Yeah. I mean, really, even just the real lack of social life. And like Freshers Week is like a Zoom quiz. And you're like, how are you supposed to, like, this is when you're supposed to leave home and meet people who have different opinions to you and have different cultural backgrounds to you and figure out some stuff. But you're not doing any of that. How are you supposed to figure out who you are? Like, even just the personal development away from, like, the professional side of the acting or anything. How are you supposed to get any of that?
Yeah.
At all.
It's like, there's this, like...
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Fucking door jam with life just being chunked out of, like, 2020 people going to university. I really felt for the graduating actors that year as well, because when you're at drama school, like, yeah, you're doing all the training, but you're leading up to this third year of showcase when you're doing these, like, public performances, and it's so exciting and it's so great, and that just got taken away. Fucking awful.
Yeah, they just had to do self-tapes and post them online.
That makes me want to vomit.
Brutal.
That's literally what I do as a professional actor.
Yeah, self-tapes are the worst ever, but
hell. Oh, do you
self-tapes? I've done a few self-tapes, but just for like ads mostly, is what comedians get because they don't think we can, like, act properly. But I always feel so self-conscious when you have to show them your hands.
I've never done that. I've never auditioned,
like,
for now.
Half of my Instagram comments on my stand-up comedy clips are that my hands are really small.
Let me see.
I have little hands. Like,
do you?
Yeah. But it's like, yeah, we have the same size hands.
Yes, but I've actually got quite big hands for a woman. And also, I'm not I'm quite a small woman. And I do have quite long fingers.
Whatever way they look on camera, they're just little fat baby hands, and like loads of people are just like it won't, they'll just like, they won't say anything other than just tiny hands. That's the whole comment. So when I have to do that in an ad, I'm like,
well, I know this is gonna fuck it. If it wasn't a no before, it is now.
I had to do an ad for a cafe chain that I won't name. Because you're not supposed to. I didn't actually sign an NDA, but
Starbucks.
No, it wasn't Starbucks. But I was the part was like the whole ad, they like sent you the whole thing. It was like, this woman's having a terrible day, all these bad things happen to her. And then she walks into this coffee chain and the barista, which is the part that I was going up for, spots her walk in and gives her a warm, kind but professional smile.
Basically going, he's not flirting with her. There is nothing sexual about this. She does not feel uncomfortable.
But that was the whole tip.
Because I know exactly what that is. When you literally have to go, like, sorry, for the listeners, I'm now going to do an impression of what you may be able to do. It's like a 10-second clip of you going.
Yeah. You, like, spot someone walking in and go. And you're like, what am I doing? And you have lights set up and a camera and you've got a backdrop and you're like, you do it like 10 times in your room. It's insane.
And make your partner watch it, be like, is this one better? They'd be like, they're the same.
You're just smiling, you freak.
No fucking Shakespeare. doing an acting course, you spend first year Guildhall. And the first term is spent entirely doing animals, and we had to go to the zoo every single weekend. Bearing in mind, we had a zoo pass, so we didn't have to pay for it.
Was yours a gorilla?
Yeah, but
they don't do primates anymore. They stopped that.
Yeah, I was given special allowance.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, which I felt quite special about. because I think I wanted to be a lion, and they were like, no. And then I was like, well, can I be like an otter? And they were like, no.
I think now they just assign them.
Just
they like tell you what you have to be.
We gave suggestions, and then they went, no.
Yeah, my girlfriend had to be a camel. Just rough.
And then he spent a time doing it. I don't know if they still do this, but they did they do the animal showing?
Yeah.
The animal showing. It's a zoo. That you, as a probably 18, 19, 20 year old, I was 19, you are in your black leotard and black leggings, and you, for about an hour and a half, pretend to be a gorilla, and people stand and watch you.
Yeah.
And that's, I got a degree.
Yeah, it's fucking wild. But it's so fun. They really get you. Yeah, I find that over like the 2 day final round thing. Like, I'm so skeptical and so like comedian about everything. Like, I'll just make fun of everything and whatever. Yeah. Just separate myself from any kind of vulnerability often. But like, they get you into it. Like, I remember during that, those like movement workshops, they were like, oh, what's, they were like, right, be spaghetti.
Oh yeah, fucking hell. God, that smacked me in the retina.
And straight away, like, I was like, cooked or uncooked. Like, straight away.
They will hate
that. Yeah, of course they hate that. Because they love to feel like they're imparting knowledge.
Yes.
This is what I've learned about auditions is you have to massage their ego.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Whereas I'm really bad at that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they would have fucking hated that.
I remember this guy at one of the drama school auditions thought he was like unlocking something in me in the interview. He was like, and I'd like, it was one of the ones which I liked where all the other auditionees were in the room while you were doing your monologue.
Oh, blimey, I never did that.
Loved it. Because I can just
perform.
Kill it. Like I can just make people laugh.
Yeah.
I know how to do that. Yeah. So I was like, bah, 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 and people were laughing and all of it. Yeah. And there was a bit in one of the speeches where I had to turn to someone and like tell them to shut the fuck up. And I just said to one of the other auditionees, I was like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because he was laughing. And it was just so fun and funny. And I was like, I've done really good there. And then the guy in the interview was like, you know, like, what makes you angry?
Where
he was like, you haven't shown us any anger. Yeah. Like, are you scared of being angry?
Victoria, what happens when the laughter stops?
Well, this is the fucking thing. Yeah. So he's like, what makes you angry? And I was like, questions like that.
Oh my God, you dick. Like, I love it so much. I love it.
But then
he
wanted me to be like, oh, I've never really thought about that before.
Oh my God. Oh my God, I just felt a new part of myself. I never knew it was that.
Yeah, that's what they want. They want to be like, he's like moldable or, and you're like, right, fine.
They want to be the person.
Yeah.
I was having this conversation the other day. I don't sponsor anybody yet in any fellowship, but like, I was talking about it to another fellow in AA the other day who was like, you know, being when I become a sponsor to someone, I know all I'm going to be focusing on is the fact that I want my sponsee to go to meetings and be like, my sponsor said this incredible thing. Unless it's like life changing, I don't want to do it. Like, I want to inform you so much that you're like altered by my presence.
Yeah, that's so, that's the exact same thing.
And it's so much ego and also so much ego comes into being an addict as well. So it's not fucking surprising. It was a co-ed school.
Yeah.
Blows my mind. I would think that you were really cool. I'd want you to be my friend.
No. No, it was very strange. I remember being like behind on a lot of stuff. I was like late to have my first kiss.
How old were you when you had your first kiss?
14, which doesn't feel late now.
No.
But at the time, I was like one of the last.
Yeah, man.
And now I'm like, anyone under 14 who is kissing, that is so gross and weird. They are full children. Like, that's horrific.
Mm.
But yeah, 14. And then just thought, like, I was very, didn't really have a girlfriend. And then when I did, I was, like, all in.
Oh, yeah.
All in. Like, I got when I was 15. And
This is what Sarah Key Worth and I was discussing.
I listened to that episode.
Yeah.
We had that. I mean, Key Worth was talking about like how she didn't think there was any like other queer women the world. I was like, no other woman will have me.
It's exactly that feeling. Yeah.
And so I was with her from when I was 15 till I was 20.
Shit's a brick, man.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
So that was my whole identity. That's what I found. Was like, as long as like everything I do makes her happy, and like it was, I'm her boyfriend.
Then before I'm fine with everything else. That extreme codependent thing of going like, as long as I'm making them happy, as long as I'm carrying all their pain, as long as I can control the emotions, and you know, it's all I'm good.
That's so much pressure to put on a person, though.
So much.
In
pressure.
Hindsight, I'm like, fuck yeah, that must have been really rough.
Yeah,
to like,
the entirety of my identity, happiness, and life, everything is lying on you.
Yeah.
It's fucking, it's horrendous.
So that permeated into like my first 2.5 years of uni as well. Which is an interesting
when you were percussionist at Guildhall.
Yeah,
which
know.
Is the coolest of all the instruments.
It's really not. It's really, really not. I
tried to get with all the musicians and no one would have me.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
The actors were always like mythical creatures to us, I think.
Because we are.
Because you got good posture.
People just comment underneath being like, rounded shoulders.
Oh no.
No, it's better these days.
Why are you scared to open up? Fuck off. No,
and I think it's genuinely to do with because I was so concerned with being really skinny at the time because I had a terrible eating disorder, classic fucking drama school. And I thought that if I opened up my shoulders and stood back, that I would look more broad. So I hunched to make...
Yeah, you want to squish yourself in.
Yeah, to make my like collarbone come out and like look kind of skinny. Which is just fucking around and like, what the fuck? And I got, and again, I will just reiterate, I got a fucking degree. Like,
yeah, you didn't get a degree in eating disorders.
I bloody did. I got a PhD in that. I got a bachelor
pretty
of
huge arts. Dysmorphia.
Pretty huge dysmorphia. PhD in eating disorder. Sorry. Oh god, that was really good. I mean, it's fucking awful, but I remember always being really impressed by the opera singers. I was really impressed by the
really? Well, they're the worst people ever. They talk so loud. They do because they want to
show off that I support everything with my diaphragm and this is how I talk even when I'm just at the shut the fuck up, Jeremy, please.
Jeremy,
Christ on a bike.
Last year I met some people in the pub who were at Guildhall as opera singers, and no, I know that it is a craft that requires a lot of training, but the opera singing course is like 7 years.
Longer, yeah, they're mad, yeah.
That's what it takes to be a fucking doctor.
Yeah.
I was like, that. They were there when I was there, and I was like, you're still there?
Well, half the problem is that your voice doesn't...
It doesn't develop until you're like 29 or whatever.
Yeah, so basically they stay in education so that they can keep honing it and massaging it and working on it until they're 29,
basically. That makes
sense,
because I was like, well, that's fucking... Are you going to the zoo every weekend?
No, they weren't going to the zoo quite as much.
I just want to revert back to school. Did you find when you went to Guildhall that you found your place a little bit more, or you found your identity a bit more?
I guess the only way I would think I found some sense of identity is I often think you identify with what makes you different. Or I've found that, like, whatever sets you apart from whoever you're around is what you kind of latch on to. And it's whatever someone tries to take away from you is what you kind of hold on to the most. So when I moved to London, I became so much more Irish.
I was going to say,
Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
Because I'd never seen myself as Irish before.
Yeah. But suddenly it's novel because you've been in Ireland. Everyone else is Irish.
But to be honest, when I was a kid, I was like Italian.
That's how Italian.
People... No. That's how people would like refer to me or like be like the Italian, because that was what made me different.
You do have a confusing name.
Vittorio Angeloni is fucking wild to be called when you talk like this. But people, so that's what would kind of be the thing. But then when you move to London, I was like the Irish guy, which is why I found so much community amongst my Scottish friends, and like going to watch Celtic and stuff was just like, I can just be a person. I don't have to be the Irish guy. I don't have to represent my whole whatever. But then you put that on yourself. You are like Irish, and I wanted to be different. I didn't want to be part of this like very upper middle class institution of like a lot of elitism. And I'm not, I don't like to use elitism as like a dirty word, because it's fucking good sometimes. The best people should do the stuff. It's good to be good at things. I think it's good to work hard and get better and aim to be one of the best in your field. I think that's a good thing. But it is inherently that, and it, because it's classical music, it's, there's a huge kind of class thing. And I'm middle class, but then you arrive and you meet like fucking middle, like upper, and you're like, fuck, that's a different thing.
And then Emily Lang swans into the fucking
foot. I meet people like you. But it's just like, it's things like that where you're like, oh fuck, you paid more to go to secondary school than you're paying.
Although now. I was desperately at that point trying to be like, I'm not Butch.
Of course, so yeah. And like, this is this bizarre thing where people get really angry at posh people for pretending they're not posh. And I'm like, well then stop fucking placing so much value on not being posh. It's not their fault what their parents did. It's not your fault what your parents did, or what your parents gave you, or what your the opportunities your parents tried to give you. Of course they did. They'd be like fucking nepo babies. And I'm like, yeah, I hope my kids have opportunities that I didn't have. That's what we all want.
So we've sort of discussed a lot about what was going on at the school and the things about yourself and how you were like, no one likes me, and it was a fucking struggle. But what are the things, despite kids not liking you when you were little, what are the things now that you really love and like about yourself?
I hate this. I know everyone hates
this question.
It's so like,
the only person who liked this question was Grace Campbell, who was like, I'm just,
of course she fucking did.
And who was on there? Harry Trebaldon took the piss and was like,
how
just gonna
do you do that? How do you have that kind of fucking? I'm so not a fan of myself. What do I like about me? I think I like maybe work hard.
That's great.
Yeah, people tell me I work hard. I think that's just from, it comes from like music college, of that thing of like people are doing 8 hours a day and like practice. So the work ethic of like classical musicians is like insanely high.
How old were you when you started playing?
Like 11.
Right.
But that's like crazy high. So, and then the average work ethic of like a comedian is like so low.
Right.
So even though I wasn't a very hardworking classical musician, that still makes me like the most hardworking comedian ever existed. So it's just like, it's just a fluke that I'm still have that guilt of like, I need to be doing this like 8 hours a day, because that's what people in music college do.
Yeah. And it almost kind of goes unacknowledged, I think, because like if you are a musician, again, it was Jordan Gray I was discussing this with, like, if you are a musician, that's just what you do. You just practice if you are really dedicated to it, and it kind of goes unacknowledged, and people then stand back and go, wow, that's really impressive. And you're like, is it? It's just what I do. And then to actually acknowledge it and go, wow, I am really diligent, I am really hardworking and tenacious, that's fucking great. And I think it's really good to recognize it. So at this portion of the podcast, we like to call thank you letters, because we like to express gratitude and thanks for people in all places, all things in our life that we are grateful for. Who would you like, or what, or where would you like to say thank you to?
My mother. She's the best. And I felt really bad recently, because I was, I obviously had such like a like difficult like period of my childhood. She said to me recently, we were having like a bit of a heart to heart, and she was like, is there anything I could have done better? And I was like, oh no. No. It so wasn't your fault. It's crazy.
That's so,
like, it's just, but she obviously just had no idea what to do, because what the fuck would you do if your kid just couldn't go to school and like,
and your brother was alright.
Hard, yeah. Both, I'm the middle child, older and younger brothers,
right?
And they were both like, I mean, I don't know, but like, seemed fine going to school and stuff. But it was like, like, what would you do when your child is obviously going through so much like pain and panic and fear for seemingly no reason? And it's like, you would feel like you'd fucked up, but it's just like, it was just a difficult thing. Yeah. And it's not your,
it's not your fault.
Not that it's her fault.
Yes, thank you to your mother. Is anyone else or anywhere?
My mom and my dad and like,
I love that.
I think they're just they've been great.
Are they still together?
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
Yeah.
Well done, Irish.
Good job, team.
Damn well that is beating the odds. So we've had some thank you letters from listeners and we're going to read some of them out. So we've had someone who says they want to say thank you for their cat and their cat's paws and tail, which I definitely understand because I say thank you to Mickey every day for that. Thank you. Thank my home for being warm.
It's a very privileged position during a cost of living crisis.
Yep, but that's absolutely. Okay.
Thank myself for surviving.
That's nice. Thank my legs for carrying me around when I've been so mean to them. Yeah, I've done that. I've a massive whore to my legs gone. And someone said, I just want to send love and appreciation to everyone out there who is struggling, which is really, really lovely. And we also have a couple of survivor stories, little survivor bites of survival, which we are going to read now.
I am 50 days sober. Thank you for sharing your story. It helps me remember that I'm not alone on this journey.
Mm.
50 days is fucking decent, isn't it?
50 days is fucking cool.
That's a good little milestone.
That's anyone who's been in an AA room who's shared a milestone will just like see the fucking uproar and people like, oh, you want to feel good about yourself. Go into an AA room and be like, I'm 24 hours sober. People will lose their shit.
Yeah. And you'll get you get a 2 month chip really soon. So
I found my 2 month chip in my coat pocket the other day from a year ago, which is so great. 50 days getting sober in any way in that starting period is always so tough. And if you've managed to get to this point, you're fucking killing it. One day at a time, you know, God willing, but it's okay. Just keep going on your journey. I am also a survivor of sexual assault. Hearing your story has given me the strength and space to share my experience with my family and ask for help, which is fucking amazing. Wow. Because it's a really, really difficult thing to do. And because it's so shrouded in shame and a lot of pain. I've shared this before, but you know, I when it happened to me, I told my mum, and then we didn't talk about it for another 10 years. So I really, really understand, and well done for doing that. I also like feel like when I'm sharing survivor stories, and they go like, "Thank you for sharing your story," it's like I'm just fucking giving myself a big pat on the back.
Yeah. That's what it felt like.
Yeah, it really does. It felt like that to me.
Yeah, it felt really self-indulgent what you just did.
I felt like Tom Hiddleston at the Golden Globes.
Yeah, I'm so sorry you're going through that. Aren't I great?
I'm so sorry I was drunk, but at least I'm a really cool person.
Yeah. On a positive note, I'm class.
Tell me, do you have any upcoming shows or tours?
I'm on tour soon. It's
so crazy that you're on tour.
No, it's a really cool show. I'm really proud of it. It's touring. It's nearly all sold out on the tour. There's tickets left in Southampton, Cambridge, Darwin, Sheffield, Galway, Limerick. I don't know why I thought I could sell tickets in Southampton or Cambridge. Not my crowd. but maybe yours, so please do come along.
Oh my God, yeah, I'll get all my friends.
So come along. It's really cool. I got nominated for an award. It's kind of about my experience being Irish in England, and it's way funnier than it sounds.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for coming. Really appreciate it. Thank you for your honesty. Thank you for your openness. Thank you for being really funny. And you know, obviously,
thank you for having me.
Also for the
any accent. Voiceover agents that want to pick me up, please do. Do my proper voiceover-y voice.
Thank you.
Join me next week with my beautiful new friend, comedian Pierre Novelli. If you or anyone you know is struggling or needs help with the issues discussed on Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends, please visit the podcast bio where you will find contact numbers with people readily available to give support. Please get in touch with your survivor stories at either contact@whydoyouthink.com or on Instagram at Emily_Lang_UK. To have your story or your thank you letter read on the podcast, please put survivor story or thank you letter either at the top or in the subject line. We really want to hear from you. We don't care if it's a catastrophe story or a small win from your week, your favourite place, person or thing. We are here for all of it. Don't forget to rate and subscribe, and I'll talk to you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.